Welcome to the Dudley Unplugged podcast, a show that gets to the heart of plumbing. Well, welcome back to another episode of Dudley Unplugged. Today we're going to be talking about water wastage and flushing the toilet and some really nice bathroom suites. So I'm your host, Mark Morris, and we're joined on Dudley Unplugged today by Josh Bennett, a product manager from Thomas Dudley, and Sean Foley and Sophie Webster, both from Resico Bathrooms. So welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're all doing okay today.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, good.
Great.
Good.
Excellent. That's fine. So if I could start with Sean and Sophie, can you tell us a little bit about Resico Bathrooms, a bit about its history and, you know, any of the values that drive you as a business forward?
Yeah, so Resico is an Egyptian company. However, we export to 50 different countries. It came into the UK around 1987, I believe it was. And since then, we've grown to three ranges, which is our Atlas Professional, Atlas Trade, and Design Series ranges.
Excellent.
So the Egyptian factory, just to add to that, the Egyptian factory is producing nearly 7 million pieces of sanitary a year.
7 million?
7 wow. million. And the UK is one of the biggest markets, although, as Sophie said, they export to 50 countries worldwide.
That's quite a substantial operation, I would have thought.
It's huge, yeah. They're one of the world's largest manufacturers of sanitary ware. So really big organisation, really well supported. We're really well supported in the UK by that parent company, but we've done some great things in the UK and grown from a relatively lowly position through the 70s and 80s, I think. Mm. And we're now the second largest sanitaryware supplier in the UK.
Wow, that's quite some substantial growth there from where it was to being the second biggest in the country. Yeah. That's quite a feather in your cap, really.
Indeed.
Yeah, I mean, how do you find it with having sort of the mother company in Egypt? Do you get to go out very often?
We're often out in Egypt. We love to take customers out and show them the operation. One of the interesting things about the Egyptian factory is its size. Mm. So you are transported around the site on buggies or in cars. It's not a walkable site. It's very, very significant, yeah. It's a wonderful place to go as well, Egypt, full of rich culture. And the obvious kind of tourist spots like the pyramids. Yeah. And we love to take customers out there and show them the operations. In terms of the UK PLC operates almost completely independently. That's our parent company, but we're responsible in the UK for the UK operations.
I know, Josh, you went out not so long ago, yes. and I did see a video you posted on social media of trying to cross a road, which I thought was very funny.
It is. Yeah. I think it's about 6,000 people on the main site. To get around the factory, as you say, is by car. It is vast. It is sanitary on a whole nother level compared to what I've seen previously. And yes, Egypt itself, I can't recommend it enough. Absolutely great place to visit. But crossing the road is a game in itself.
A bit more dangerous than in the UK. Yeah.
I can't imagine it's like a game of Frogger as you go across the road trying to avoid everything.
One step forward, two steps back.
I think you gave up, didn't you?
I did. We got a taxi to cross the road, basically. Yeah. Yeah. This is the true, genuine truth.
Just about bravery. You need to be brave. Yeah.
just go for it. Yeah.
Just cover your ears.
I'm going to go.
It sounds
like it's an amazing place.
Yeah, indeed.
For a manufacturer. So, how did they end up coming over to the UK?
Well, I don't know the history back that far, but the business has established itself over a significant period of time in the UK market.
I'm going to ask the question. You supply multiple different industry sectors with your bathroom suites. Is that how you sort of design them to sort of fit different ones, or is it anything more sort of technical than that? So you if you're supplying it into hotels, for instance, do you have to have certain things you have to do to make sure that it fits properly?
Absolutely. Resico Bathrooms, initially, going back to your question about the historical context. We're manufacturers of very high quality but well priced, good value sanitary ware. Mm. And the UK business was built on that premise. But over the last probably decade or so, Lessico Bathrooms have evolved as a business to service many more sectors in the UK with a much broader product range, at different price points, different product categories. And therefore, we can service the jobbing plumber who's looking for, you know, good value for a landlord's property, for instance, or for a residential refurbishment at different price points. So from a cheap and cheerful, no-frills bathroom range all the way up to, you know, luxury bathroom suites, furniture, brushed brass handles, black sanitary ware, black brassware. So we have a broad enough product range to cater for domestic, but we also have an extended product range into commercial. So we can service commercial projects, whether it be new projects or refurbishment projects, and hit those specific requirements that are needed, whether it's Doc M, whether it's water saving solutions, whether it's specialist products like urinals. What else have we got specialist in the commercial category?
I'd probably say as well the education ranges. So
education,
school toilets.
Very good point. Yeah, yeah. Specific ranges designed for infants and juniors at schools.
That's why I suppose people forget that, you know, requirements for different things, like, for, as you mentioned, infant schools, they've got to be a lot smaller, got to operate a lot lower to the ground, you know. So indeed. I think people forget that there's that thought has to go into how all that works.
Yeah, there's a lot of specialist product that's designed for those different market sectors. And Lessico are able to supply all of those sectors, which is one of the reasons why they've seen such fantastic growth over the last 5 years or so.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned sort of black sanitary ware and stuff like that, or the buttons and pushbacks. Have you found that the trends have changed over the last few years, and what people are asking for is sort of really sort of changed a lot from what was maybe a traditional sort of maybe a stainless steel finish or a chrome finish?
Brass, way back when, yes, yeah.
Colours definitely come back into the bathrooms market after a significant period of white's good enough.
Yes.
I'm not saying we're back in the 70s and 80s of the whisper greys.
Ooh,
and we're not seeing that kind of extent of colour in the bathroom, but definitely there's more colour.
Yeah.
It's usually in a niche part of the market, so it doesn't represent significant volumes.
Mm. Yeah.
Which obviously we all appreciate. But I think the colour's really coming in and being driven by the trend towards using furniture in a bathroom.
Yes.
So we lose pedestals, we now use furniture, need more storage in the bathroom, different finishes, different colours, and then also bringing in brass and satin and nickel in terms of brassware and handles is adding some real design flair into bathrooms, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. The matte green that we've brought in with our furniture and the cobalt blue as well, both have been
matte
really
green and cobalt
popular.
Blue. Yeah, really, really popular in our design series range in Zara and Layla.
Yeah,
really, really, you know. 10 years ago, you'd have said no. Yeah. You can't. Please don't bring those products into the UK market and launch them. But most of our orders are on those two product ranges, aren't they?
Yeah,
those two color schemes, more so than the gloss whites and the traditional anthracites and the gloss greys. And
I think from a purely from an outside point of view, I would say maybe it's to people want to use the bathroom more as a room rather than just a functioning space. So I would say it's become, I mean, even my, my bathroom done, you know, what suite do you want? What do you want it to look like? And even when we chose the bath, because a bathroom isn't very big, but they said, oh, you can have a different bath. It's very thin and it goes deep. So yeah, you can actually get more water in it because it's made it a lot thinner, designed specifically for smaller bathrooms. So, probably driving through the different colours is probably taste. People want different things, want the bathroom to look like a room rather than just a functioning space as tastes change. So that's probably been driven by the consumer, probably, in terms of what they're asking for. Would you think that's probably sort of along the cases that the consumers actually want more choice in a bathroom now?
Yeah, I think it's how a design sort of meets that function aspect. And that's definitely why you've seen furniture on the increase, no doubt. You kind of getting rid of the pedestal to a certain extent and pushing towards furniture, which has got that more practical aspect, but it's also something you can have a bit of fun with the splashes of colour or different designs.
It's interesting when you say, obviously, now you've said it, mine doesn't have a pedestal because we've got it sitting on top of a unit. And it's only when you say that, I think, oh, yeah, actually.
Yeah.
You know, we chose that specifically so it matches the toilet unit. So now we've got, it looks like a proper joined up space now.
And I think, interestingly, in terms of those broader trends, just like the kitchen, the bathroom and the kitchen, you know, going back a significant period of time, were very much rooms of function.
Yeah.
And there was different living spaces in the house, but now we use all of our different rooms as living spaces with their own identity. The kitchen has now become, in many houses, it's the living space.
Yeah.
You know, you're bringing sofas in there, you've got dining tables, you entertain in the kitchen. Mm. Bathroom space, I'm not saying you entertain in the bathroom space. The bathroom space is the area that you can retreat to.
Yeah.
And it serves more than just a functional purpose in many properties now. It's that area for almost for some, a bit of well-being, a bit of relaxation. Yeah.
So just on that note, obviously when it comes to bathrooms, it uses a lot of water. So, I mean, water savings, I think, has become more of a thing over the last sort of maybe last decade. I remember when I was growing up, water savings wasn't something anyone talked about.
No. Apart from a hose ban in summer.
Well, I don't even... Well, I came from a relatively council estate and, you know, I don't think we had a hose. Probably wasn't something we thought about. But even then, you probably had to bring it through the house and connect it to the sink. Yeah, we didn't have an outside tap or anything for it. Yeah. But have you seen water savings or has that been a driver for you when you're looking at your designs and how that works?
Well, you reminded me of my youth now in an outside toilet with a high-level 13-litre flush WC.
Yeah. Or the room where the spiders hid. That's what I was at. Yeah. My nan had an outside toilet. That was terrifying.
It was cold in the winter. Yes. I remember that.
I think she used to use newspaper on the side rather than toilet paper as well. I don't know why. I just have a memory of using it and being scared to death, freezing cold, and having newspaper instead of toilet roll.
So we're showing our age there. Sorry, what was your question?
Yeah, we were. we digressed. Water saving.
Water saving is being driven from a number of different angles. I think, quite rightly, responsible manufacturers are designing products now that are water saving because we all understand the broader need for us to have a more sustainable environment for our kids. I think it's being driven through legislation, particularly in the space of new buildings, new residential buildings, Part G of the building regulations. Commercial new buildings now have a number of different sustainability methodologies that they need to align to achieve certain scores, whether it be BREEAM or LEED or SCAR ratings. So buildings are now being designed with water saving in mind. Commercial buildings, I think the figure is well above 70% of water use in commercial buildings is from bathrooms, washrooms, and the majority is from WCs and urinals.
And that's a lot of water, isn't it?
So there's a massive area where we can significantly save water. On the consumer sense, we all pay water bills. It's times are tough for lots of people. You know, there's a lot of pressure on finances, disposable incomes.
Yep.
Anything that you can save on your bills is going to be seen as a real positive. So there is demand now from the consumer side. So all of these are combining together to drive a broader change in the industry where we all develop products that are going to save more water, use less water, and benefit everyone in the future.
Yeah. I suppose leading on to that, Josh, you can probably comment more on this. There was a leaky loo report issued a few years ago that showed around about 4.5 to 5% of toilets leak, either from the inlet valve or the outlet valve that's inside the toilet. We did a bit of calculation, and that works out to about clean and fresh drinking water going down a toilet to about 4.5 million bathfuls every single day across the country.
Wow.
It's wasted. Josh, working for a company like Thomas Dudley, that always tries to keep these kind of figures in mind in its design process. What's Thomas Dudley been doing lately to try and sort of help mitigate that kind of issues that come up, and what sort of things would you recommend that can be done to help?
I mean, so looking at it from a macro level, just to reinforce what Sean was talking about, there's basically a need to do more with less. So we have a growing population, we have a reluctance to build new reservoirs, There's a reluctance to increase water bills for various reasons, including politics. But
there's challenges with the water infrastructure as well, of course. Very much so,
a leaking infrastructure as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
So if you're looking at it from a new build point of view, one of the things that we're getting increasing demand from the top 10 house builders for now is a single low flush to start off with. So instead of having a 6-litre flush, which is the regulatory standard now, they're looking at 4-litre flushing and below. So that's something we can offer out of the box right now. I think from Lessico's point of view, one of the really cool products you guys have, particularly for the commercial market, is of course Prep-A-L-Air, which I don't know if Sophie, would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, can do. So we've been in partnership with Prep-A-L-Air now for perhaps about a year now, do you think?
Yeah, more.
Yeah. Possibly more. So Prep-A-L-Air is low flush. It works. Don't think they like to say vacuum, do they?
No, it's
air assisted.
Yeah,
air assisted. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. It's the world's lowest water flush WC, which uses an air push and patented technology.
Is that sort of like you get what you see on an aeroplane, maybe?
No, that's a vacuum.
There is a difference.
This is air pushed.
Okay.
And you know the technology is being developed to be even lower flush, and it's very, very, very popular and proving a big winner in the commercial space. Mm. Not so much the residential space. Residentials are slightly different. The Prep-A-L-Air is designed to operate in high traffic areas, and significant savings can then be made.
Mm.
But interestingly, on the flushing, broadly speaking, we've gone from a 13-litre to a 9-litre flush. Historically, we've then driven down to a 6-litre flush as kind of an industry standard. We've got the 6 and 4-litre dual flush and 4 and 2.6-litre dual flush.
Mm.
And then the next evolution from there is lower still. So there's a real significant, over time, there's been a really significant drive down towards lower flush volumes.
Mm. It's interesting. From someone who, I mean, I've only been in the industry 4 years, so when you're talking sort of 6-litre flush, 4-litre flush, I find it hard to visualise what that actually
means
in reality.
It's a significant amount of water, isn't it?
It would be, yeah. I mean,
think of a litre bottle.
Yeah,
you know,
for most people, I don't think most people consume it. I'll take this as if it's me. I wouldn't have a clue how much water is in a toilet cistern. I know you could get a brick and put a brick in and it would reduce water. People didn't really understand why I was putting a brick in the toilet. But, you know, people say you could put a brick in or you can buy those, bags you can put in that reduces the amount of water in. But I think for most people, as long as it flushes the toilet, the waste away, I don't think people care.
No.
And I think I don't think people realise how much waste is, how much water is actually being used in a toilet or how much is being wasted down the toilet. I think, and maybe that's geographical, maybe people in the south, the southeast might care more because a lot of them will be on meters. And I think the way that they probably get targeted is down that way because there's a bigger population and I imagine their infrastructure is under a lot more pressure. Mm. But it's interesting that, and I imagine you've seen this if you've been in the UK since 87, is that back in 87 it was all siphons.
Yeah.
And now it's you got to go through the mix and then you've got valves. So that's probably had to affect how you manufacture or what type of products Lessico actually bring to the market, I imagine, with that change.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So have you seen how, I mean, that's from a design point of view, obviously your siphon would generally be on the front and now you've got buttons that can pretty much go anywhere. So how, from a design point of view, how do you actually approach that where people want different things to work in different ways?
Well, again, it's back to one of your earlier questions about the different sectors that we serve because there's different requirements for different sectors.
Yep.
Obviously, we've gone from lever flushing, siphon flushing to push button flushing. We've now got in wall frames and cisterns that are built with elegant flush plates, dual flush or single flush plates, which are designed for probably more more design aesthetic driven kind
yeah,
of
but people want to make
choices
it look nice.
Where
yeah.
it's going to look a little bit nicer, yeah. So there's lots of different variations. And it's based on our philosophy is create the right product solution for the right market
yep.
And offer best value. And that's what Yeah, that's what we do.
I suppose that leads us on, actually, Josh, to a new product that Thomas Dudley's working sort of with Lessico on, which is the Quantum.
The Quantum.
Yeah, I mean, it's designed to sort of fill a couple of gaps.
Yeah, so Quantum is our first true push button siphon. Now, as we've talked about, lever operated siphons were standard products up till 2000. Water regulations changed in 2000 to harmonize to European standards. They allowed push button valves into the market. And what's really happened over the last 20 years progressively is more and more products, more and more bathrooms have been replaced. So they've been replacing lever operated toilets with push button valves. And the problem of push button valves is accelerated to where we are today. What's the problem? The problem is quite simple, really. A push button valve has a dynamic seal beneath the waterline that can dry, perish, get dirt in it. And when that seal fails, you can have a leaky loo, as it's called.
Right.
And that leaky loo, when it leaks, is found to be on average 200 to 400 litres of water a day, which equates to about 150 pounds a year in wasted water.
I mean, that's
per toilet.
That's quite a lot per toilet. Per toilet. For a consumer that may only have a couple of toilets, it's still quite a considerable amount.
Yeah, and some, whilst the leaky loo reports talked about from 4 to 8% as an average, some water companies now are talking about 25% of all toilets leaking. Now, of course, some of those leaks, a significant proportion of the leaks are from the flush valve and also from the inlet valve. So Quantum is addressing the flush valve. So if you could get a Quantum for me, Mark. Quantum is the culmination of about...
As if by magic.
Yeah. It's about three... there's been about three different versions of this particular iteration. But as a product development, it's been going on 15, 20 years, and it's been a real challenge from a product development point of view to achieve a push button siphon, as crazy as it sounds, as silly as it sounds, really, to achieve flush performance of a flush valve with siphonically operated technology is a challenge in itself. The way a siphon delivers water is quite different to the way a flush valve delivers water. If you remember your old lever, sometimes it was really hard to start a flush. So trying to get that lever actuation force through a push button without it being hard to push has been a real challenge. So you had the challenge of being low, light to flush, really good flush performance as if it was a flush valve, and low travel. You didn't want a really hard button, because we found with kids and the elderly, they don't want to push the button loads in. And that's what we've ultimately achieved with Quantum, is that this version is to be deployed in Lessico's close coupled suites, the Sakara and Clio. We see this particularly relevant to housing associations. Housing associations, there's 2 million homes under management in the UK. They are interested in reducing water bills for their tenants and also making it easier to maintain and service their properties, because they usually manage their properties themselves. So that's Quantum in a nutshell, really.
I mean, it's interesting that obviously Thomas Dudley and Lessico are sort of working together on this to get it to market.
Yes.
I suppose between the two companies, you see a lot of benefits from that going forward.
Yeah, 100%. And the two organisations have been working in partnership for many, many years. Mm. And it's fantastic tech. And if we can bring that new technology to market for the benefit of both organisations, and at the same time, tick boxes that need to be ticked in terms of reducing water volumes in flushing, then it's just a win-win-win situation. So yes. We think it's a fantastic new development.
Yeah, because it kind of answers the sort of questions where, I had no idea that when I first started in working for Thomas Dudley, that if a system had a handle, it was a siphon, and if it had a button, it was a valve. No idea that was the case. So obviously with handles, they're not necessarily aesthetically pleasing, but siphons are infinitely better than a valve, which is one of those ironies that actually there is a perfectly solution to leaky loos, which is the siphon. But people want to have a nice button on their stuff because it looks nice. Yeah. So
hidden cisterns as well. And yeah. So that's a challenge in itself, because the hidden cisterns, often the actuation is done through a flush plate or a push button as opposed to a lever.
Yeah.
You do see some levers maybe in commercial environments, an airport maybe, or a service station, but generally speaking, it's push button or flush plate.
It's the big tell. Flush valves are always operated by some method of push button. It's important to get across for those listening watching what the difference is between a siphon or a flush valve, really. Siphon ultimately has to lift water up and over in order to start a flush, and that's how quantum works. So in its natural state, it physically can never leak, whereas a flush valve, because of that dynamic seal that's dumps water into a toilet, that dynamic seal that's beneath the waterline, that's the problem area. That's what you're trying to get around with the siphon. That's why, just for those listening, siphons are just bulletproof in their natural form. The only way a siphon can fail, in inverted commas, is the diaphragm can tear. And you might remember where you're pushing a lever repeatedly to start a flush. That's the tell. But even with this product, it's demountable in situ without dismantling the system in order to replace that diaphragm.
But even with the damaged diaphragm, it still wouldn't
leak
anyway.
No, it still doesn't leak.
Yeah, so I mean, that's quite important, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, I suppose for a consumer, anyone at home, if they're not sure if they've got a leaky toilet, there's probably, because it can just be a very small leak. I suppose there's a surefire way of testing it, Josh. I'm sure you know the method of the little bit of toilet paper on the back. So.
Yes, very much so. So, if for those listening or watching, leaky loos are quite hard to identify in reality because, of course, the water is clear. So, you can drop a little bit of paper on the back after a flush and see if that's getting rinsed away. A leak can only be a small trickle at the back of the pan, and that'll be around 150 litres a day. But the more average one, you might see a stream if you're lucky. That'll be more like 400 litres a day. But we've seen toilets leaking over 1,000 litres a day. So if you're talking in a hotel application where you've got 100 toilets in your hotel, you are talking around 10 of those toilets at any one time are leaking. Mm. So why would you do it? It just doesn't make any sense, really.
John, do you see this as a kind of a way forward, as bridging a gap between what we've got and what where we really want to be in the future of leak-free toilets?
100%. I think the challenge is you've got two segments of the market. We've got new buildings, which are generally designed well going forward in terms of water usage. The challenge is then in the refurbishment market and in the 25 million homes around the UK, where we've got old housing stock and we'll have an enormous amount of sanitary ware, bathroom sanitary ware, that's, to Josh's point, leaky loos. How do we get through those? How do we refurbish all of these properties? Because it would make a significant impact.
Yeah, because it is. I mean, water conservation has become a very big thing. And as Josh said, there's very little building work in terms of new reservoirs going on. If you look at how the population of London has expanded, but as far as I'm aware, they haven't built any new reservoirs to help the situation.
Not in the Thames area, no.
Which would seem to be a logical thing to do. You know, if you need to store some water, you need to put it somewhere. Mm. So I think the focus is going to be on how can companies, we're going to have to come up with the solutions for this, because governments are inherently short-term thinking due to the nature of politics. So they will probably generally pass the problem down to us, which is why, I mean, I think for another kind of company, probably wouldn't have come up with this solution.
No, I mean, at the end of the day, this is a well-known, well-documented problem in the UK, courtesy of the water companies and government are driving the demand for it as such. It's not so well-known in mainland Europe, which is interesting.
Where sometimes there's more challenge in terms of water conservation than in the UK.
Very much so. So I'm not sure how some of the sort of Far Eastern players or elsewhere in the world would have developed this. We're obviously a family-owned company. It's very much been a mission of Martin Dudley, our owner, to drive this product through. And it's been financed by him. There's no external financing on this product. It's all internal. So I do wonder if others would have achieved the same with the means they have compared to us.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose looking forward, obviously, quantum, do you see the trends in sort of from a Letico point of view in terms of what's coming? We all see the sort of how Japan handles toilets over there, where they're all singing, all dancing toilets. Do you see how sort of do you see the development going forward in the UK? We're probably a lot more conservative. I don't think people want to walk in a toilet and the toilet seat lifts up and all fancy lights and things. But do you see a development in how the sort of from your point of view, how it's going to develop going forward?
What do you think in terms of product development going forward? Anything in particular that springs to mind?
I think there's definitely the push not only for more water efficient products, but also things that are made out of more sustainable materials as well. So you're going past just that water usage to how we use materials in other ways, like, for example, repeat materials, where we're taking plastic bottles and recycling them and turning those into like shower trays.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think it's a really, really interesting partnership we've got. Yeah. But I think going forward in the future, our technology roadmap is very much aligned to bringing sustainable products to market in the bathroom space. And as we referred to earlier, we have Propel Air, which is for commercial markets. We have lots of water-saving tech in our traditional Lessico bathroom ranges in WCs, showers, taps, water-saving baths. So we produce a water-saving brochure, and we can help businesses and new buildings designers to design them as water efficiently as they possibly can. And repeat materials is just an extension of that, and there's many extensions in our product roadmap going forward. But repeat is manufactured from PET, which is plastic bottles. And it's fully circular and fully recycled at end of use. It's a completely unique product. You can make the fabric of a bathroom, so shower trays, shower floors, shower panels for walls, technical panels where pipe work and electrics are embedded into the panel. It's lightweight, super durable, quick to fit. It's a game changer. And we want to bring these products to market to change that sustainability kind of, to create the future of sustainable bathrooms effectively.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Again, it's driven by the manufacturer rather than that, because obviously we look at what the market is asking for, but we drive it.
But like Thomas Dudley, this is how good, strong organisations can achieve competitive advantage through innovation. And that innovation finds its way into the marketplace and affects change. And that's what we're all here for. That's what we want to do. That's why we go to work in the industries that we do, and we do the things that we do.
Yeah. Do you find the managing the quality systems can be a challenge, or do you find that sort of a very important driver for Lessico to make sure that the quality? I mean, Thomas Dudley has its own set of quality requirements. I'm assuming Lessico has the same. So I'm at, you know, quality checks regularly to make sure that what you send out is actually first rate, because Lessico has a very good reputation in the market. So I imagine that your quality controls must be quite high.
Has to be. And we meet and exceed all British, European and global standards in terms of manufacturing and bringing products to market. There's no other way that you can operate. And, you know, we're producing nearly 7 million pieces of sanitaryware a year and taking that to market. So absolutely quality. We've been our key USPs in the marketplace. As you've mentioned, Mark, we've always been recognised as a manufacturer of quality product. We've also been recognised as a business that's got excellent service levels, and we've also been recognised as a business that's got that offers great broader value in the whole kind of commercial sense, and that's what we hang our hat on. And we'll continue to do so.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to hear that that obviously Thomas Dudley has sort of joined with you on this project, because it's two companies that take quality and service, you know, as primary drivers in everything that goes on.
And two brands of two very important recognized brands with a long and successful history behind them. So
that's it. Is this tilt towards the water efficiency, water management of the washroom and bathroom space that has been a particular appeal for Dudley with Lessico? Is that and something that we think that's the next new phase? Yes, we've gone to black and blue and different colours, but the next phase is efficiency, definitely, because we've got a growing population. The resources ain't changing. We've got to do more with less.
Yeah, I suppose you think about it, we're going to be at 80 million as a population pretty soon. And that's, you know, with the infrastructure we have, something's got to happen, and it's going to be driven by companies like Lessico and Thomas Dudley in the bathroom way, in order to drive those changes through and to come up with the most sort of environmentally friendly and efficient products as possible.
I think there's only kind of two ways it can happen. We can either drive that change, or consumers can drive change.
Yes.
But for consumers, for the groundswell of opinion consumer opinion to actually affect change, there needs to be a significant education piece. So we've all got a responsibility to educate as much as we can. Mm. But that's a challenge with 80 million people across the UK.
Yeah, I mean, we tend to sort of, and it's difficult because you can't really speak to everybody because it's such a huge amount of sort of, the market's so big. We talk about things on social media as yourselves do and try and get the message across. So I think it's all about just keep repeating the message, you know, keep repeating and raising people's awareness, the fact that this amount of water is leaked. It's an unknown sort of problem that only people notice when, I mean, we were talking to some plumbers earlier and they, with the amount of times they've come to do some another job and then the customer said, oh, any chance you can look at my toilet while you're here? Cause it's leaking a little bit. And it could have been leaking for months.
Yes.
And they'll just say, while you're here, can you have a look? Because it doesn't seem to be a driver when they've got a leaky toilet. Yeah, people just seem to ignore
it.
No,
they don't. They don't realise that little trickle, how big it actually is. It's substantially worse than a dripping tap, but not quite as irritating as a dripping tap, funnily enough. So, yeah, it's a real big problem out there. And you will see a lot of the water companies now making quite a big song and dance about this. Is getting a lot of attention from DEFRA and government.
It's having to, because what we'll see is we'll see more and more pressure on water resources over the coming years, and then it becomes an issue.
Yeah,
what we want to do is we want to affect change before it becomes that issue where, you know, the water supply is being turned off over in certain periods of you know, seasonal kind of dry weather.
I mean, you tend to get hose pipe bans at times of the year you wouldn't expect a hose pipe ban there.
Yeah, if people realise the pressure on the water system at certain times, I think they'd be quite surprised.
Well,
yeah.
Definitely in London 2012, they were hours away from declaring a drought in the area.
Yeah.
Imagine the political damage worldwide that would have done. And that was 10 years ago. A lot's changed in 10 years. So, it's an ever-increasing issue.
I suppose we all do a bit. Water companies, you know, they need to fix the underground leaks, because that's a huge, and need to stop, you know, water going into the sewage system and the sewage system going into the oceans. They need to do their bit. We're doing our bit in terms of bringing out products that, you know, we've designed to stop leaking. And I suppose the consumers now got to drive that as well in terms of what product choice exactly. Yeah,
product choice and education around water usage as well. But I think most people are developing a kind of, there's a habitual change to people's water use. I think people recognise it. The question is, how far could we drive that change? Because it probably needs to go a lot further.
It means little change. I mean, people, you know, how bad it was to leave your tap running while you're brushing your teeth. I think most people don't do that now. It's little changes that come around that make a bit of a difference and a little bit of a difference. And then that all adds together
but
to make a big difference.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Very much so.
So I think that's also quite important on there. So from Lesco's point of view, have you got anything that you're sort of looking at over the next couple of years? Anything you're excited about? Anything that you, you know, you want to drop a little hint about that you're working on at the moment?
Well, I think the big thing for us at the moment is bringing repeat materials into the UK market as a sole UK distributor for the product. It's really, really interesting. We've got some really big plans this year in terms of events. We're at Installer Show in June with yourselves, which we're really looking forward to, an opportunity to meet lots of our customers and meet new potential customers. Our product roadmap is continuing with some really interesting developments, both in water saving but also in product design. We've got new short projection furniture coming to market, new sanitary ware designs. We've got lots of really, really good stuff. So we're moving quicker and quicker, bringing more and more fantastic product to market, and continuing with, you know, year on year record growth in sales that we've seen for the past 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. So it's exciting times for us.
Yes, it sounds exciting. Yeah.
Have I missed anything?
No, I think that covers it. Actually.
Yeah. I suppose Josh, over the next couple of years for Thomas Dudley product wise, I mean, I suppose there's probably more iterations of Quantum going forward.
Yes, very much our product roadmap's around water efficiency, hygiene in the public washroom, and products for plumbers, basically. So products that make it easier to fit or nicer for the plumbers to fit, really. And there's an absolute, we're getting some real momentum on it, particularly after COVID, which was very disruptive for everyone. Yeah. We're getting some real momentum in some really interesting areas. And Quantum is really the first iteration of various things that have been coming after COVID, really.
I mean, it's great to see two sort of well-known, well-respected brands coming together to help solve a problem. I think that's a roadmap for the future as well. That I think, you know, a lot of companies should be looking at doing. So, you know, if there's a problem, two companies come together to fix it. Yeah. I think that's a brilliant way.
I think we're pretty good as an industry, the bathrooms industry, in terms of collaboration and working together towards a common goal. And the Bathroom Manufacturers Association, plays a significant role in helping and supporting those changes that we all want to see. Working together with great businesses like Thomas Dudley is the right thing to do, and it's good for both organisations.
Mm. Excellent. Have you got a website anyone can go to have a look at your products?
Yep, that'd be lessico.co.uk.
Excellent.
Lessico, L-E-C-I-C-O. Not yes. Not Lekico. Lekico.
Yeah.
Lessico.
Well, I saw that page. I thought, how do I pronounce that?
I think it's a Lebanese ceramic company.
It is indeed, yeah.
Okay. I didn't know that.
So it's,
I think Lechico was the favourite one.
Lechico.
Lechico, I like that. I'm not going to use that one.
Lechico.
Perfect.
Yeah. Our Italian brand.
Yeah, that's it. Absolutely perfect. But, well, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate you coming down. I think it's been really great, really interesting. To everyone at home, if you enjoyed the podcast, please like and subscribe and press any buttons that do all that around wherever they are. I'll say thank you to my guests, Josh Bennett, Sophie and Sean. And until the next time, stay tuned for next edition of Dudley Unplugged. This is Mark Morris signing off.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you. Thanks.